Hello, and welcome to Listen Up, the E3 Diagnostics podcast. I'm Julie Renshaw, Regional Sales Manager. I'm back today with Dr. John Pumford, Director of Audiology and Education at AudioScan. John, I'm delighted that you could join me today to discuss, for part two, RECD, Couplers and Conundrums, to NCN Beyond.
Thanks for inviting me, Julie. I'm happy to be here again and talk a little bit more with you about RECDs.
In part one of this series, we reviewed all the basics of obtaining the RECD and why. Now we're moving on to programming the hearing aid in the test box. How important is it to select the type of hearing aid, BTE, ITE, canal?
Very important. You're touching on another key component of coupler-based simulated real ear measurement, that being the need to include the microphone location effects that would be present on the patient's ear when a specific style of hearing aid is worn. Essentially, what I'm referring to is the boost in a sound field signal caused by the influence of the head and outer ear as that signal travels from the sound source to the hearing aid mic. Obviously, in test box measures, there's no head or outer ear canal present in the test box. That would be a whole other set of problems. So we need to build that boost into the test signal. Different hearing aids have different mic locations and therefore a different influence of these external anatomical factors on the signal. For instance, BTEs with mics over the pinna don't benefit from the enhancement of sound caused by the pinna, concha bowl, and so on. Whereas CICs, on the other hand, they get an additional benefit from these anatomical factors as sound is gathered and boosted by the external ear. So if we want to be accurate in our simulation, we need to choose the proper hearing aid type from the speech map device type dropdown. Another important wrinkle is that deep fitting devices such as CICs have an additional boost to the RECD applied to account for the smaller volume between the medial end of the device and the eardrum that is usually present in these cases versus, let's say, a traditional hearing aid. In some systems, you can choose between a CIC shallow, CIC deep. It really just depends on the software that you're using. But suffice to say, most systems offer a software option for a deep-seated device fitting where the RECD is effectively increased due to an assumed smaller volume than typical and a smaller volume than was present during the real ear portion of the RECD mentioned earlier, to help improve, ultimately, the accuracy of the simulated real ear measurement. There's plenty of research on these topics to suggest the deep insertion corrections and MLEs are appropriate, and we've captured these from the fitting formula developers.
Wow. Accounting for the MLE, the microphone location effect, and deep insertion corrections seem to be an essential step. If we've been so careful every step of the way acquiring an accurate RECD, so we don't want to trip up at the goal line.
That's right. There are also the assumptions the verification system makes around the coupling that is used to measure the device in the test box, which can impact the sound level measured at the coupler microphone. For instance, whether or not ear mold tubing or simulated tubing is being used to attach the hearing aid to the coupler. So long story short, for the test box simulations to be accurate, the system needs to account for all of these factors. And choosing the proper device type in the dropdown and speech map provides this information.
We've certainly learned a lot, and RECD is definitely an important component for accurate hearing aid fittings and verifications. Sort of surprising that it wasn't until the new ANSI standard for real ear measurement, S3.46-2013, that was the first one in North America to standardize the RECD. I mean, finally having a standard is great, but it did add a bit to the coupler confusion. What is the role of various couplers in complying with this standard? We've all used the HA1 and HA2, but there are also CIC, couplers labeled as open. I've seen all types over the years.
Yeah, you're right. There's been a number of couplers out there designed for different purposes. Traditionally, we've been thinking of an HA2 or what's sometimes referred to as a BTE coupler for the measurement of RECD. There's also an HA1, which is sometimes referred to as an ITE coupler, which typically hasn't been used for RECD as it involves the attachment of a foam tip to the coupler via putty, bringing a whole lot of headaches and possibilities for errors if slit leaks are introduced, say, due to a less than ideal seal, or if the putty gets down into the coupler cavity and changes the volume. So for this reason, the HA2 coupler has typically been used as it allows for the RECD transducer to easily couple to the tubing at the top of the coupler. If you later needed to conduct simulated real-ear measures with a device on an HA1 coupler, the verification system simply applied some math in the background, or an HA2 to HA1 transform, to accurately capture the acoustic impact of the coupler change. Thankfully, all of this stuff happens in the background in the verification software. Now, CIC couplers, they were designed to account for the smaller residual ear canal volume assumed to be present with these form factors, but this is just simple math, and we can account for that aspect in a different way by modifying the RECD and not requiring the fitter to change out couplers. It's just much more convenient, user-friendly, and helps you avoid any mistakes caused by using the wrong coupler, where the measurement system would have no way of knowing the volume had changed. Regarding open couplers, they were in theory designed to simulate on-ear venting from test box measures, but the literature has questioned how accurate and representative these vent effects with a metal coupler are relative to the human ear canal. Suffice to say, the ability to accurately simulate an open fitting in a test box is still an area that eludes us. And in fact, that's the reason AudioScan currently prevents the selection of open venting during test box measures. More work needs to be done. So to come back to the new ANSI standard, long story short, the document is now specified that RECDs be captured referenced to an HA1 or ITE coupler.
John, given your comments, why would the HA1 coupler be selected for the ANSI standard?
Well, in essence, research has found that in some situations, the RECD value obtained using an HA2 coupler could vary on the same ear depending on the signal transducer used to deliver the signal. In a nutshell, the standard pointed out that the influence of sound source impedance on RECD measurements is taken care of when any tubing or simulated ear mold in the coupler component of the RECD is removed, meaning the use of an HA1 coupler reference. Now, while some systems still use an HA2 for the RECD measurement, the equipment will apply an HA2 to HA1 conversion factor or math to get the RECD specified to an HA1 coupler reference and ensure a consistent RECD measurement. While I'm on the topic of couplers, I should also mention there's a new coupler being used in the VeriFit 2, a 0.4cc coupler, which results in what's now termed the WRECD or wideband RECD. The concept here is exactly the same as the standard RECD, the only difference being the volume of the coupler. So while RECD assumes a 2cc coupler volume, WRECD assumes a 0.4cc coupler. The 0.4cc coupler being used in this case to allow us to accurately measure high frequency information beyond the standard 8 kilohertz possible with a 2cc coupler. In essence, that 0.4cc volume allows our measurements to get above the microphone noise floor in the high frequencies, and it minimizes the influence of any standing waves in the coupler in the high frequencies given that smaller volume. All of this to say the 0.4cc coupler and the associated WRECD allows us to now convert audiometry out to 12.5 kilohertz and to conduct coupler-based simulated real-ear measurements out to 12.5 kilohertz. And should there be a need, for example, to get this RECD specified in an HA1 reference, say for use in fitting software or other measurement devices, the VeriFit 2 does the math and provides the equivalent HA1 referenced RECD in a data table.
Gosh, the 0.4cc coupler is really a unique and innovative coupler to have in your arsenal. So a lot to consider around couplers. Thanks for clarifying. Now let's say you follow the manufacturer's guidance for how RECD is to be measured on their system and it does not involve the use of the HA1 coupler. I've had some audiologists adopt the use of the HA1 coupler because it's now the ANSI standard. That's a problem, isn't it?
It's a big problem. Yeah, you need to use the coupler that the measurement system is expecting for the test you're conducting. So in the case of the RECD measurement on legacy AudioScan systems, that would be the HA2 BTE 2cc coupler, whereas with the VeriFit 2, that would be the 0.4cc coupler. As I said before, there's a bunch of transforms and math applied for either audiometric conversion or coupler-based simulations that require the coupler reference, including the volume and the coupling, to be known by the system, as these factors influence the SPL measured in the coupler and displayed on the measurement test screen. If you use the wrong coupler, the reality is the transforms are not going to be appropriate, the resulting measurements would be incorrect, and your fitting decisions would be negatively impacted as a result. In fact, it's for this reason that we label our blue 2cc couplers on the VeriFit 2 for ANSI IEC test use only, as the system is expecting a 0.4cc volume, which you get with the silver couplers, for all other test box measures. So to use an extreme example, if you were to use the 2cc couplers on our speech map test, the system would then show lower output than it would have with the proper 0.4cc couplers, given the larger 2cc volume, which might lead you to program in more gain than needed to match targets or to meet the RESR targets on the screen. So you can see where this is headed, right? A fitting that is providing too much gain and output, potentially leading to loudness tolerance issues or worse. So please, please use the couplers expected by the system for the test you are running, so the transforms applied are correct and the measurements are valid.
Whew, okay, really an important point, John, because otherwise you've done a lot of work to end up with potentially a less than, you know, positive outcome. So one final question that struck me as you've discussed the RECD. Once the RECD is obtained and the hearing aids can be pre-programmed in the test box, this might be one option to reduce patient contact during this time of social distancing. Can you share your thoughts on this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So exactly. As we know right now, this current COVID-19 situation has resulted in a need to consider safe and effective methods for delivering hearing health care. And for many, this involves thinking about ways to minimize close patient contact time. And when you think about it, the hearing aid test box is an invaluable tool for those who see the value in verifying the hearing aid fittings, but are looking for ways to address concerns around infection control. I won't go into the reasons why verification should be done. That's obviously another podcast. But suffice to say, test box measures enable safe, efficient, and effective verification. So beyond simple quality control checks, with the benefit of the RECD and a test box, you can accurately simulate real ear measurement performance, especially if an individually measured RECD was measured on a patient at a previous appointment. And if not, even with average RECDs, this allows for the objective characterization of a fitting to a level that simply isn't possible with listening checks or patient comments. In fact, we know there are a number of clinics right now using some form of Dropbox or drop-off hearing aid service where they simply exchange devices with patients without the need for close in-person contact, and they simply use the test box and simulated real ear to assess the performance of the patient's hearing aids or their associated devices. Of course, there's challenges, as we discussed earlier, with accurately capturing venting that might be present on an ear in the test box, but at least with simulated real ear measurements, you have a way of capturing the output of the product that you can compare at a later date. Long story short, by using the power of the RECD in the test box, clinicians can continue to follow best practice procedures for fitting and verification of hearing aids while minimizing close contact time with the patient. Definitely, in my opinion, an option worth considering given the current social distancing situation we find ourselves in.
John, so, so many great points. That concludes RECD Part 2 to ANSI and beyond. Listeners, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to contact your local E3 sales representative or send John an email at john.pumford@audioscan.com. Thank you so much, John, for being a part of our podcast.
Thanks for inviting me, Julie. This was a lot of fun.